You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hello, lovely humans. I'm Wyo Lee, and you are listening to Sex Stories, a podcast where we share stories of human connection in an effort to make a world where taking care of each other is the norm. And our guest today is a 38-year-old bisexual monogamous cis woman who was raised by a Catholic mother and is in her fifth year of a relationship with a nice man. She is really into sex, including leaving and receiving marks with trusted partners, bruises, hickeys, and buildup, especially the days, weeks, or any amount of time before she has sex with someone, especially a new someone. She also loves intense teasing, edging, and, like me, journaling about intimate encounters and fantasies and encouraging others to share their stories too. The creator of Aurore, a digital space for confessional written erotica, she splits her time between LA and Brooklyn. Welcome, Carly!
Hi, so happy to be here with you.
I am so happy to have you here with us. Could you please start off by telling us, if you had to rate yourself today on a sexual shame-o-meter with 10 being the most full of shame and 1 being like, what shame, where do you fall today right now?
I think I'm around a 3.
Okay. Yeah. Why? And then are there any contexts, people or places where it gets squiggly up or down?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you mentioned Catholic mother immediately. I was raised with a lot of shame and guilt around sex. But when I started doing the work that I do with Aurore, I realized that compared to a lot of people, my shame is quite low. And maybe it's not that I don't experience shame, but I'm able to have that conversation with myself and remove it from the equation. So it's always there, but I can, you know, close the door on it or push it out the window. And it certainly never shows up in the way that I interact with others. I do not ever judge. And I think that's also what's allowed me to do this kind of work. People have always come to me to kind of share their sex stories, sex issues, or their shame. And I think look to me as a person who they knew would not judge them, would make them feel better about it, would be able to laugh it off or tell them something worse I had done. So the shame is there, but I've made friends with it in a sense that I can tell it to fuck off when necessary.
Yeah, it almost sounds like your awareness of the shame as it comes up is really maybe good in real time, and that you're perhaps a hyperprocessor of it. You know, because it sounds like, is it like voices in your head that are like, shame voice, and then you're like, be nice to myself voice, or kind of like, what is the experience and like, how did you create that inside of you?
Yeah, you know, I think that I was sexually shamed or slut shamed from such a young age because I have gorgeous, beautiful boobs that developed quite early. I experienced being a sex object and being called a slut because of the way my body looked before I had even kissed a boy, right? Yeah. So very young age. And I think that my relationship to that shame, that experience, I started to absorb it and own it and be the slut that others thought I was. You know, I think about this. I think about it a lot. Like, did I become this because I had to, because it was put on me? You know, like if my body didn't look the way it did at such a young age, would I have gone into a different field? You know, would my whole life be different? Would I be less interested in sex? I debate that also because I was very early interested in sex. That was something that fascinated me from a young, young age. But yeah, I think that I had to make friends with the shame. And it's not necessarily a voice of, you know, good and evil, but I feel guilt for everything all the time, not working hard enough, sleeping too late. And I just remind myself that I need to rest. I need to listen to my body. I deserve to rest. I deserve pleasure. And yeah, it's just a conversation, I guess.
Beautiful. On the note of that conversation, you almost kind of preempted this question, but I would like to hear maybe an additional layer or maybe some more adult reflections. As you think about your relationships and your personal pleasure throughout your life, how do you notice societal norms have affected them, either for the good or the difficult?
Definitely for the difficult, I think. Yeah, I think that sex, the way I was raised and the time I was raised, the place, I guess, too, probably played a part into it. But yeah, there was a lot of shame around sex. It was considered to be very bad to have sex too early. It was considered just tacky or taboo or cheap to own your sexuality or enjoy your body. I think that was all so much behind closed doors, you know, and not even just in my house, but everywhere, I think. And I mean, even thinking about when I first got my period, I had a lot of shame around that because I thought I was the only one. And I think that it's so important for there to be open dialogues between friends, between, you know, in sex ed, things like that. Because if I had talked to people about it, I would have realized that a lot of other people at that time also had their periods and were also feeling shame around it. And that's so much the basis of the work that I do now, is kind of being able to name your shame and name the ways that society has deterred you from embracing your body and pleasure, and realizing that so many other people suffer from the same issues. I think that itself is incredibly freeing. And I think just that open conversation, being able to name a thing and feel connected.
Dang. You know, it's so funny because I too had an early experience in high school where the popular girl who I kind of, looking back, I'm like, oh shit, I had a crush on her, walked up and called me a whore, like with her two like crony girls. And I'm like, I had just kissed one boy at the time and like was trying so hard, but was getting rejected. And, you know, so I have the same kind of like reflection on like, what would it have been like? You know, and also with shame, and I would be curious to know like your experiences about this. Like, I have so many examples where I'm like, oh my God, we're all the same with these shame parts. Oh my God, people have so many other different shame parts that I didn't even consider. That's why maybe I accidentally explode people a lot. You know, do you find the connection both in the like sameness of the stories, but also like the differentness of experience?
Yeah, I do find that really interesting how it manifests in each person. And I think as you were saying that, I thought of, you know, your original question was like how societal norms have either prevented or encouraged pleasure for me. And I thought about in high school how by that time I was used to being called a slut, even though I was not. And like, what if being a slut though was like the coolest thing to be? And I was so horny. Like, I wanted sex before I had it. I wanted to rub up on anyone and everything. And like, I did feel shame about that. And I did feel that there were a lot of moments where I was hooking up with somebody and I stopped them because I was ashamed of my body or ashamed of maybe I didn't smell good. Because I think that these were a lot of things as you were developing or at that age that were really like scary, like if you don't taste good, if you don't smell good. And Peaches and Cream was like a really popular song at the time. And so it was like, I also luckily, I think grew up high school time for me, it was encouraged for women to get oral pleasure, which I think is amazing. But I think I had a lot of like fear and shame around letting people do that to me. And if I hadn't, I would have probably had a lot more oral sex.
Well, I think that's such a good point, because I think one of the things that I personally have found so difficult about connecting with people about sex and learning about sex is there's a lot of shoulds out there, right? So I hear so often, you should communicate. You should communicate with your partner. And I have been spending my entire adult life figuring out how to communicate about sex with these different things. So it's like, you should receive oral pleasure. Well, What are all the pieces for me, my own personal self, with my relationship with my body, with this particular partner and their personal shame baggage? Like, what are the actual frameworks that are going to be concretely helpful for me to do that should, right? Otherwise, I'm just like wallowing. You know, my first decade of having sex, it was a lot of wallowing in confusion and the added layer of meta shame because I wasn't doing the should, you know? So I would love to hear, in your current adult life, what do you need in order to feel excited to connect with someone sexually?
Well, I was just thinking about on Aurora's Instagram, every week we do a kind of Q&A poll with our community based on something in the story. And last week's story had like very heavy praise kink. And the question that I asked our community was like, what do you want to hear during sex? Like, what would make you feel good during sex? And as I was getting all these answers, I was like, yep, I want to hear that. And I want to hear that. And I think that had there been, you know, had I the vocabulary to ask for stuff like that at a younger age or in my relationships prior to when I was able to ask for that, that would have helped so much in getting me to a space where I was able to receive pleasure and feel and remove that shame around my body. And I think I didn't learn that other than when somebody I was with started to say these kind of things to me. And I think that's why you can talk all you want about intimacy and sex, but like if you're not actually doing it, it's really hard to learn, and people have so much to teach each other. Yes. Sometimes we learn we don't want something or that this person isn't a good fit for us, but oftentimes we learn, okay, like this is one way to do this or ask for this or talk about this. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. So I definitely need to feel safe with somebody. I think that when I have more casual sex, I'm much more guarded. I'm much more attached to that shame. But when I am in a intimate relationship and I feel safe, I can be so much freakier, so much kinkier, so much more fun. I think if I feel safe to not have to think so hard about how I look, how the other person feels, not that I don't think about them anymore, but like I have a level of understanding of what they want, what they enjoy, and that they're into it. They're here for a reason. It's not just like we happen to come together. So the monogamous thing is interesting because I am working on that. I think I have always been more open, but the people that I tend to choose are people that give me this deep security and safe place. Well, the men that tend to be those like deeply secure, safe types also tend to be a little bit less open to explore, at least really? In my experience. Okay. And so I think I'm on a road to monogamish, but I think that it's going to be a long one for this okay. relationship because it is very uncomfortable for my partner to think about. So I'm working on figuring out how to talk about what I want in a way that makes him feel safe and not threatened. And it's, you know, I think there's a lot of like coaches out there and people that do the shoulds, as you mentioned, and there's no one way to talk about these types of things. It yeah. all really depends on the person that you're with. And so I'm still trying to figure out exactly what that looks like, but yeah. Yeah. I am monogamish in my heart.
Okay. Monogamish on the road toward possibly more openness at some point. You know, and it's a tricky conversation, right? I talk to people about poly stuff a lot. I'm a person that, like, in kindergarten, I made up a game called Mistletoe Time where I would literally chase boys and hold a green – I had, like, a little green plastic volleyball. And I wouldn't, like, actually kiss them, or maybe I'd kiss them on the cheek. Like, I didn't have my first kiss till I was 15. But they were my three future husbands. I never married any of them. I don't know where they are. But Zach, Mark, and Jordan? I don't know. I don't remember. But
wow, those names.
I know. They were very like classic. Well, and it
Saved by the Bell.
It was a Catholic kindergarten that I went to because it was the only like school that would have me in school all day, but my parents worked. I've always been a more open-hearted person, but have similarly struggled with those pieces of, you know, kind of finding the balance and security of the openness and not. Going back to what you said about casual partners and that feeling of safety with trusted partners, in your personal experience, can you like start in a casual connection and turn it into trust, or are you like on a path toward relationship, or like, no, that's casual, so it's staying casual? How does it work for you?
You know, I think it's gone both ways. Actually, when I think about my current partner, I think I felt that it was casual in the beginning, but he was very persistent and kind of ignored those leanings that I had. But also, I think it was a way I was protecting myself by keeping something casual. The time that I met him, I had the previous 3 years probably had like three really intense breakups with people that I did have really close, intimate relationships with. And I think by the time I met him, I was like, you know what? That didn't work. So I'm not going to get into another serious relationship. And for the first like year that we were dating, and I wasn't seeing anyone else, but I like was like, I don't want to be your girlfriend. Like, yeah. I don't know what that means, but I don't want it. And he, as I mentioned, coming from a kind of more conservative background and like place. So he would go home and his like family would ask like, oh, are you seeing anyone? And he'd be like, yes, but she's not my girlfriend. And they would be like, well, what does that mean? And and I think he really struggled to like explain like, well, we're seeing each other, like, you know, we're dating, but we're not like together. And finally he like said, you know, I need to know that this is going somewhere. And it was like obviously going somewhere, but like he needed the title. And I think I had wanted that in the past too, but he was the first relationship that the first person I've had that I could imagine myself being open with because I feel so safe and so protected. And I think that that is the number one thing needed in any open relationship, yeah, is feeling first and foremost safe and loved with your primary partner. Because in the past, I think I was like too jealous and insecure to consider that to be an option. And so that's a beautiful thing because I do think I am open in my heart, but I had never really gotten to a place where I felt like I could be in practice.
What are the concrete behaviors that make you feel safe? Because I would say most people, when they tell me their sex stories, the sexiest ones, whether they are open or monogamous, have a strong element of safety and trust. And I like to hear kind of like what that looks like for different people.
Absolutely. I think that for me, I have a anxious avoidant attachment style and probably leaning more anxious. And for me to feel safe in a relationship and therefore in sex, I need, like, even in times of conflict, for that person to remind me that they are not going to abandon me. And that is something that manifested naturally in this relationship. Like one of our first big fights, I left the room and closed the door because I was like very upset. And he stuck his head in and he was like, I'm mad at you right now, but I still love you. And that was like game changing for me. So the reassurance that you can mess up and we can be mad at each other and we can have conflict and recover, and I still love you, that doesn't change just because we're in conflict. And I think that goes for like having a more open sex life too. It's like, because there inevitably are problems that arise in being open, but knowing that the love is there regardless of the issues you're experiencing and that you can return to that person. I think that that's the safety for me.
That's beautiful. I think that is so important, and I'm so glad that you shared it so clearly. For me, one of the phrases that I have used when I'm in conflict, whether it's with a partner or a dear friend, I'm like, I'm upset right now, but we're on the same team. We're just not on the same page right now. I'd like to get on the same page, what, you know, regardless of what that looks like. If it takes time, like, let me know what you need. And typically that has helped me realize when a relationship isn't going to continue, because if it's just about fighting when I'm like, let's be my teammate, like, let's figure it out, and there's no collaboration there, that's kind of it. Where can you go from there? Going back to what you said about casual relationships and feeling more guarded, how does that manifest for you? Is it emotional, or are there physical behaviors? Is it like eye contact during sex? What does it feel like to be guarded with a casual partner?
You know, that's actually funny you mention eye contact, because I wasn't aware that this was something that I struggled with. And I think that there was also, in these instances, definitely drugs and alcohol involved, which don't help focus, you know.
Yeah.
But I did have two separate lovers, like, demand that I, like, look them in the eyes while they were fucking me. And I think that it's less of, like, I don't know if that's so much like a protective thing, or more like I'm in bliss and I'm in the moment. And I think maybe I do avoid that eye contact that is more natural with somebody I'm close with, because with my current partner, like, we laugh a lot in sex. Like, it's because it's silly and, like, things happen and whatever. It's like, moving on. And the eye contact isn't necessarily heavy, but it's there. It's like you check in and you just, you know, in the laughter, you check in too. I think with people where I'm having more casual sex, it's more about being a little reluctant, like less game for stuff. Like, I am not going to necessarily want to experiment with anal penetration with somebody that I don't trust, because I don't totally know their approach. And also, like, that can get messy. So you want to be with somebody that you're like, okay, like, we're in this and they're going to be cool about whatever happens. I think that, yeah, being vulnerable sexually, like physically, is more difficult for me in a casual situation, but also absolutely emotionally. And I think there definitely have been people that I've been casual with that I have wanted it to be more. And I tend to be like the type to cut off when that happens, because I am incapable. Once those feelings arise, I can't really be casual with that person anymore. And well, you did mention in the beginning and in the intro, talking about like the weeks or days or hours of like wanting but not having. Yeah. I think that my ability to deny prospective lovers if, like, I feel I need to cut them off has actually manifested this really fun game of cat and mouse and desire, but knowing I can't, you know, not wanting to let myself. And I do really enjoy that game and denial and thinking about it and wanting it.
I love this entire window into intimacy, right? It's something I've been thinking about increasingly. I don't have as much casual sex. Well, that's not true. It depends on how you language it, right? Like, I don't ever just, like, go out and stranger fuck. It's not interesting to me. I get so many internet people that assume that because they know that I'm kinky because they listen to my podcast, that they are suddenly going to be my online dominant, and, like, then they're going to come fly out and visit me. I'm like, no, that's not, you know, I have to have a really good reason to fuck someone. And, you know, for me, that can look like 30 minutes of really connected conversation and clear communication about overlapping desires. And what I'm hearing, you know, in your share is that, like, I mean, I'm having some personal insights, because, like, I'm an eye contact person. And so I've had to learn, you know, I've had people be like, that was intense, or like, that's intense eye contact, and learning that there are different, like, levels of intimacy that are allowable. And I just love that you are so in tune with yourself that if you're like, actually, I want more intimacy than the container we've built together, and then you back off. Is that something that has led to, like, increased closeness, or is that usually the end of a relationship, or does it sounds like there's some edging in there at least sometimes?
Yeah, it leads to, I mean, I'm thinking about there, and this has been a while for me, right? A few years, and this all, like, pre-pandemic, because I don't think our world now allows for, like, that same casualness. Yeah, I think there were like recurring characters in my life who would show up, you know, at a friend's place almost every weekend or every weekend. And if I had some kind of intimate relationship with them prior and we had gotten to that point where I knew that they weren't able to give me more, they would continue to show up and try to go home with me. But I would have like drawn that line for myself without necessarily explaining in detail to them, without making myself vulnerable by saying, you know, you can't give me more, so I'm no longer going to engage in sex with you. And it might sound a little fucked up, but I don't think so. I think that I drew the line and they knew that I wanted more and they knew they weren't interested or couldn't give it to me, but they still wanted to fuck. And yeah. So that feeling for me of being desired but having drawn that line was really empowering and really like a turn on for me. And there's only one person that I ever broke the rule with. And this was someone that was like very toxic, bad person. I mean, not bad, but like bad to me, really. And yeah. I did tell him very straightforward, like, how much he had hurt me and like how shitty he was treating me. But I somehow could not say no. And I would like delete all contact, you know, block him on everything. And he would still find a way to get in touch with me. And I would go over intending on doing this edging and like drawing the line. But inevitably with him, I could never keep it. He always broke down that barrier. But otherwise, other than that one, I think that line drawing and keeping has been really empowering. And I remember like a couple years ago, I saw one of these people at a Christmas party. And like, there's just an electricity, you know, there's a tension that you feel with people that you've been intimate with. You don't hate them. Like there's still love there. There's still interest. And I felt that and I knew it was like going to be the same thing. I knew he was going to follow up, text me, etc. But I left and I drew that line and it's a great thing. I encourage everyone to practice it with fuckboys especially.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good point. And I think I just want to highlight the beauty in knowing yourself, knowing your needs, sticking to it, and allowing yourself room to be human, right? I call those people boomerangs. I'm like, they always come back, you know, like boys especially seem to be boomerangs and like, yeah, I can so relate to people where it's like there is an animal body chemistry that it is intoxicating.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
What would you say are the most satisfying parts about sex for you?
Well, kind of going off of this edging and like denial for myself, I have recently, not so recently, but in the last couple of years, and I think this has something to do with being in a more monogamous relationship, I think that the most satisfying part of sex is what comes before sex. I think that that buildup, that wanting and not giving into is actually more satisfying and more interesting to me than actual sex. And so, of course, like we can work that into sex with edging and denial. But I don't know, like the things that I fantasize about are these lead ups, these like wanting somebody. And I used to self-impose a, no sex on the first date rule for like a lot of my dating life. And it was not for any specific reason, I don't think. But looking back, it's like, I think I really just enjoyed that desire, the building of desire, and thinking about what it was going to be like, and just being so immersed in the horniness of wanting to fuck somebody and not fucking them.
Absolutely.
And it's not like a letdown when you do finally fuck them, but you can, I don't know if you can get back to that place of the desire before you have sex with someone, unless you're like a long distance relationship.
Yeah, I would
right?
say it takes creative, purposeful architecting of a relationship and two incredibly conscious humans. And also just to throw in some neuroscience, like 90% of our, I'm giving, okay, this is stated clearly in the book Atomic Habits by James Clear. And he talks about how in our nucleus accumbens, like 90% of it is built for the dopamine system, the seeking, the motivation, the curiosity, the desire, the thing that gets us learning, the thing that gets us seeking. Only 10% is liking. So that's why so often people are like, this desire, my desire, my desire. And then the desire gets met and they're like, oh, I'm disappointed. Because it's like, yeah, well, it's only going to be like a tenth of how exciting it is to pursue. And so that's why I always want to encourage kind of both, right? Because it's an evolution. What about for you journaling? Because for me, journaling after the fact about something and like capturing the lead up, but then the details of the experience almost extend it for me in the aftermath. What is it like for you?
Absolutely. I think you get to relive it. And I think going back to that one person that I mentioned that I would keep giving into even when I tried not to, so many of my journals in my more adult life were about him and about that desire, because it was so often taken from me or unavailable to me. So even when I would give in, I would still have that unrequited feeling. And journaling from that place is, I think, yeah, it was like ripe erotica. I used excerpts from my journals directly in the story that I wrote about him. And there's just so much. I mean, it's torturous. It's like torture porn, basically, because I can read that and feel again like how horny. I was like delirious and like thinking of the moments that we spent, the touch of his body and skin on mine, like just would make my whole, like I felt like I was on drugs thinking about it. And that's like a outrageous experience for sure. And so journaling absolutely extended it. But I do think it again goes back to the like unavailability and like the wanting what you can't have. And I do like, I hate that that is such a fact. And as you just gave the neuroscience explanation for it, it is. And I think that that's something that you can either make work for you or it's going to work against you. And so like withholding doesn't have to be about being chased or having shame around having sex, but I think that it builds that reward up, and then it is a better reward than getting it right away.
Yes. Also, as a person who will, I'm a person that is so full of desire that I'll go straight toward the goal and I'll get it and I'll love it. And I do. I love it. And then I'm like, again, 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 you know, and I have learned that that is not a way to make my partners value me. And so I have learned that as much as I don't want this to be true, whether it's a photography client or a listener who wants to engage with me, like I actually need to withhold in order to feel valued is the sad truth that I'm like stumbling upon after all these years of wanting it to be different, you know? And so I definitely am practicing more of like self-restraint to sort of like make sure that I'm filtering to gain the highest quality of people in my life where there will be mutual support, right? Because I have so much to give. I'm like, oh, I want someone who has the same, right? And like you said, we can kind of like create that tension together. I would love to hear, what is your definition of real erotica? We kind of talked about that. And like, why are confessions sexy, like secrets specifically? Or do you even see your erotica as secret? I mean, they're confessions, but like you're here with me as a person. We know you're Carly, but like maybe most of the people you hear from aren't. Tell us a little bit about that for you.
I would say most people who write for the site do use a pen name. And I wanted that to be available because I don't think that in the world we live in that you want your name attached necessarily to something sexual online. That will certainly follow you. And we do have some writers that are like lawyers or in like very professional positions that they could not be out about this.
That boggles my mind so much. Sorry to interrupt, but I'm just like, but if we all banded together and said, yeah, sex is a part of life, and I know we're not there yet, but I'm like, how will we be the change we want to see if everyone wants to hide? And, you know, I wonder if you experience the same thing I do of like, I'm here being myself, but then I'm like a secret keeper for all these other secret relationships. And I'm like, I'm not a secret podcaster on the side for you. You know, like, so that for me is like a tricky part, but I also understand that people don't share as much if it's attached to their self.
Right. I mean, I think that people like you and me have made a decision that this is going to be our life, you know, like we are going to be in this work and we are part of the fight. I actually had somebody recently ask to talk to me. They were like wanting to start an erotica thing. And their like main question was, you know, how do you deal with like the shame or like working in this industry and like what others think of you? And I was like, if you are worried about that, then you know, you have a long way to go in that sense, because you can't really care if people are going to associate you with sex in this industry. It's a fact. And you have to be like, I think, really willing to fight to be in this industry because everything is kind of rigged against us, right?
Censorship is real.
It really is. Wow. And it's like, you can have an idea of it going into it and then you are in it and you're like, oh, I'm fucked. Like, I had no idea it was this bad. But real erotica, I've always enjoyed reading smut, reading romance, but I would get this like ick factor if something in the plot was anti-feminist, if it was like a annoying trope, if it was archaic gender roles, which a lot of romance and erotica is that. And at the same time, like having been writing real erotica myself in my journals, I realized, and we were talking about a challenge earlier, I had lost my two clients. I had just got out of a relationship and I was like, you know what? I'm going to take myself on a trip through Europe and I'm going to give myself an assignment to interview people about sex and dating in each city that I go to. And this was quite a few years ago. So like Tinder was still like a nice happy place where you could just like meet people and have real connections. And I would go, like I landed in London, I traveled all throughout Europe. And in each city I met up with people. And when I got there, I'd be like, oh, I'm doing this project. Like I was clear that I was just visiting, but I didn't say like, I want to interview you on the app. I waited till we got there and vibed. And everyone, I was dating all men at this time. Everyone was so open and excited to share and have this conversation. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really intimate conversation about, you know, kind of the things that we're talking about now, like what dating has been like for them, what relationships they've had, what they consider to be sexy. And at the end of these conversations, inevitably, I ended up sleeping with a lot of these people because we had been so open and vulnerable with each other.
Yes.
And that project, so I had all these like recordings of our interviews and I wanted to share both the interviews and the experience of actually being intimate together. And I was like, how do I, like, where do I put this? What do I do with it? Like, I want to tell these stories. And so that's how I started Aurore. Mm. And wanting to create more of these stories that are true, that are written by women for women, that are empowering feminists, all of these things that typical romance and erotica has not been for women. And yet it is the top grossing genre in America. Like, people love these stories. People love to read porn. But I want to read smarter porn. And I also realize, I mean, I was living in New York, like LA, I'm sure as well. The truth is often spicier than anything you can make up. I mean, yeah. We're having some crazy and beautiful sex, I think. So yeah, that was kind of the genesis of Aurore, which is like, as you're talking about your plans, I mean,
dude, I think I know.
It's really similar.
Also,
yeah.
I went on a walkabout in South America. So like, you did Europe, I was in South America. That's where I was like starting to take naked pictures of myself. And I was only journaling for myself at the time, but I was like fucking as much as possible wherever I want. And this was pre-podcast, 2 years before I started Sex Stories. And that was where I was like, why is some of this sex good? And why is some of it so bad? And I like all the people. I don't understand what's happening here. You know, and so I had a much more internal experience. Wait, so you would just like bring your recorder and be like, can I record? Like, or what? How would you? That is so cool. And also like, how?
Social skills. Well, do you know what I think it is at that time, at least? Like, it was genuine connections were still maybe more common from meeting people online. Like, it was like new, but it wasn't so new.
We weren't like traumatized by online connections as widely yet, maybe.
Trust. Yeah. No, I think that's 100% it. There was still this trust in like, I can go meet this person and they're not going to be shitty or waste my time. I also think had I been dating women, they might not have been as willing to, oh, I'm going to go meet up with this person who's in town for 3 days. Like, that's not as interesting, right? But to a man, I'm like, I'm in town for a few days, let's date. And then men also, I think straight men especially, don't have these outlets to talk about their feelings and their desires.
So true.
So somebody asking them to do so is like, oh, wow, you wanna have this conversation and listen to me and I'm safe with you and you're not gonna judge me. It's like, they really, yeah, they had a lot to share. Some were definitely more guarded than others. You know, some were a little like, like, sure, I'll participate in your questions, whatever. But like, five of the people that I met on this journey, I ended up having like other experiences with later. Like, we stayed in touch and like saw each other again. The beauty of having vulnerable conversations, intimate conversations, like, you get so bonded. And I'm thinking about, I went on a bachelorette trip a few weeks ago and I ended up getting like assigned, I guess you'd call it, a room with this woman who I barely knew. Like, I had been like at parties with her. Yeah. And when we checked in, they were like, oh, we like only have a king size bed. And it was like, okay, like, so we're going to share a bed and a room. Like, we barely know each other, but like, whatever. And we ended up having this like girl talk sleepover where I told her this really like intimate stuff about like my parents' divorce, my childhood, like things that I haven't told like a lot of friends that are much closer that I've known a lot longer, because she asked and because we were in this like container, literally together in a space, and we just opened to each other. It's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I like that. You know, thing, we talk a lot about sex, but like, this exists in every kind of relationship. And I love now, you know, my mom is Catholic and she has a lot of guilt and shame around sex, but I love asking her about her early dating life and things that happened between her and my father to better understand who she is as a person. I think that we don't all have the opportunity to do that with our parents, but I think that it can be incredibly enlightening when we see our parents as people rather than our parents.
Totally. Oh my gosh. And just to reflect my own experiences in response to what you just shared, when I think about the amount of permission I now feel after, you know, this is the sixth year of collecting sex stories and talking to people, prior to that, I was criticized or like kind of attacked for being too curious. And like, I maybe am too curious. Like, that is perhaps true, if there's such a thing as truth. Like, I can get infinite, you know, point me in a direction and I just want to know everything about that one thing. But what it's done is created really connected relationships wherever I go, whatever I'm doing. And that's how I ended up here, because as a photographer, you know, that's where it kind of like started, because I'm just curious about people. And now if I'm doing like, you know, I'll do sometimes content retreats, or I'll be on a weekend where I'm like in an Airbnb with a couple of like sex worker friends. And so I'm like capturing their hotness. But then at night, it's the sleepover vibe. And that is one of the most special times to me. And so I've been, I think, the end of 2024, after the 52 days of fucking or 52 first dates or however it turns out, I think that will, my goal is going to be to create more like weekend long retreats. Maybe we do a writing oriented one, you know, that kind of combines that creativity with the vulnerability in a safe space, because I think that's how I've experienced some of my largest personal growth, like in a safe space that's held.
We're doing that. I just have to say, yeah, this retreat. Yeah. 100%. I've been thinking about that as well. Like, I want it. I know other people want it too. And I think that we are all craving community so much right
now. In-person community. It's so true. And it's so fun. It's so fun to just get together with play friends and like learn about each other and cook good food and do, you know, that's my favorite, you know, and that's why it's very hard for me to show up in online spaces where I know I should, with my air quotes. I'm not a fan of shoulds, you know, because if you replace it with a could, you get real clear on why you aren't. And I'm really clear on the fact that, like, I haven't been showing up on Instagram or OnlyFans or Twitter, all these places, because screens make me feel bad. And I have so much more fun connecting with clients directly in person. And at the same time, I do miss talking to people from all over the world. So I'm looking for that balance, and I'm thinking that there could be a fun way to create it in those real life spaces. As you reflect on your sexual evolution as a person, what were kind of the standout moments of learning for you? Like, whether it's sex education, whether it's early experiences, or just kind of like growing into adulthood, like, what formed you as a sexual being?
Well, having an orgasm against a jacuzzi jet was a major turning point for me.
Amazing. Wait, how old were you? Like, where was this in your human timeline?
Actually, I was around 15 years old, and I was with my first boyfriend, and he positioned me against it. And it was like, oh my God, this blew my mind. So that was a very special turning point for me. I, you know, talking about emotion and safety, I realized in the first few relationships that I had, sexual relationships, I couldn't orgasm until I felt safe, until I felt comfortable to let go.
Same.
And I also had for so many years an issue orgasming through oral sex, I think for the same reason as I mentioned earlier, just this shame and like kind of fear and discomfort around somebody's face being like up in my pussy. And I had a orgasm through oral sex with someone probably 7 years ago. And it was the first time I was intimate with this person. And it happened without my, you know, I didn't know it was happening, it just happened.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was wild. Like, I was like, oh, I kind of thought something was wrong with me. I was broken. I couldn't do that. And I did. And after that experience, I was able to do it with other people. Mm-hmm. And so it really just broke free this guardrail I had put up. Mm-hmm. Like, for years, I mean, decades, I was having sex, oral sex, and never being able to come that way. So I think that realizing that even after being sexually active, being slutty for so many years, like, there's still things you can learn and discover and like overcome, like, that is a really beautiful, exciting thing to me. So I'm working on, I'm not really, but I'm like, so next I will nipple orgasm, but you know, like,
dude,
I'm like, there's so many possibilities, right? Like,
yeah,
let's do it. Let's try. We have a lifetime ahead of us. We have infinite sexual possibilities.
Absolutely. And I am a neuroscience nerd. Like, my favorite podcast is the Huberman Lab. I talk about it constantly, but I just can't stop thinking about Dr. Ali Crum's research about beliefs, about how important it is, like, our physiological responses to what our minds decide is quote unquote true. And so I really encourage everyone to go look at her milkshake experiment research that where like the ghrelin in our stomach actually responds if people think they're having a high calorie milkshake versus low calorie. There's one about exercise related that she did. And so, you know, it's funny because as you're talking, I'm like, oh, well, I'm not a person that could ever have a nipple orgasm. My nipples aren't sensitive. And I'm like, well, not with that attitude, you know. And so I'm like, and then my brain is like, what if we had a nipple-focused retreat? And I'm like, you know.
Yes. I mean, I will go to that. I will help facilitate. I'm like, I don't know how to do it, but maybe somebody there will. Like, let's find right. that nipple orgasm person.
And it's different for everyone, right? Yeah. And I love just like hearing what people are into in those ways. So in terms of your own story and your own development, when did you realize that you enjoyed marks, giving and receiving? And do you identify as kinky?
I don't know. I have kind of an issue with like wanting to put labels on myself of any kind. I struggled a lot with your question of my sexual orientation because I have been with men and women and non-binary people, but I'm like, am I pan? Am I bi? Like, I don't know. And I don't care really. I think, yeah. I mean, I guess pan because it really is just like about the person. Like it's, I can't totally decide, but, so no, I don't like necessarily identify as kinky, but the marks thing, I always enjoyed bruises, even if they were just like, I walked into something or I fell or whatever. I like that they are colorful. Yeah. I like that they hurt when you press on them. I like this like visual marker of something being off. Like, I don't know, like, I'm trying to think, like hickeys, I was obsessed with in high school, I think was like my hickey phase. I loved that it signified like, yeah, I made out with someone so heavily and we were like sucking each other's bodies enough to leave a mark. I also bruise very easily. Yes, so yes. It's like not difficult to give me a mark. I would like ask people to bite my inner thighs and they would leave these like insane looking bruises, like purple and like huge. And I really enjoyed that. I also had a friend in college where we would like punch each other like over and over in the same spot as hard as we could to give each other bruises.
Wait, just so it's like sexually or regular? Like, was it just friends?
Regular. Well, where? We had an interesting relationship. Oh. Mostly like upper arms to kind of like, that's again, something visible. And yeah, like I have had so many friendships with women that were not overtly sexual, but certainly had sexual undertones. Like totally. We used to kiss all the time.
Oh.
Her and I. I don't know.
Kissing friend? Ooh.
Yeah.
Kissing and nice. Punching friend. Wait, that's what you had, a kissing, punching friendship.
Yes. That was our two main ways of touching each other. I mean, we also were big cuddlers as well.
I love that.
Yeah.
I like bruises because they make me feel both delicate and strong.
Oh, yes, I definitely identify with that. I feel that. Yeah, it's like all of this pain is concentrated into this like little circle space and it reminds you of maybe what happened. It reminds you of your ability to be bruised, your vulnerability. Mm. Yeah, bruises are fucking awesome. And I love like being marked by my lover. I love like their teeth marks on me to show that I am theirs, you know?
Same. Again, with the understanding, the caveat, just because we're having a public conversation that this is with a partner that we've asked for this from, that there's trust. We always want to make sure that if we're giving marks to someone, they want them. Because I have definitely interviewed some people who have been traumatized by marks they didn't agree to. So
absolutely. And I think that it's something you mentioned, you know, like when you're in this industry or when you're just generally sex positive, people make a lot of assumptions about what you would be okay with without consent.
With them.
Yeah. I had a situation where I was having sex with someone who I was quite close to and they slapped me across the face without consent. And it was incredibly traumatic for me. And I remember talking to a friend, it was a mutual friend. So they were also close with him. And she was like, yeah, but like, you like that, right? And it was just so presumptuous and upsetting that as I was trying to seek, you know, some help or outside support about this, that they would also assume because I was sex positive that right. I would be into being slapped. And so, yeah, absolutely. Like, you have to ask. You have to have enthusiastic consent.
Damn. So.
Sorry to bomb. Yeah.
No. I mean, I think that is obviously true. And also, consent is not a single conversation, right? Like, I might want to get slapped in the face by someone one day and not have it another day. Mm-hmm. I've had partners where I'd have to be like, actually, I have a photo shoot coming up and I don't want to spend hours photoshopping, or like, I'm going to do this thing. So like, I'm going to be with my family. So please don't leave bruises all over my ass today. You know, and it's ongoing, and my body might feel different on a given day. So
totally. I think especially with a cycle, like the kind of touch you want to experience varies so much, like week to week.
Different all the time. And I think that's why I struggle with, you know, some of the mainstream narratives I've encountered are from people who are like, why don't you even know what you want? And I'm like, well, because I'm interesting, and because every single day something is different, and because like, it's great if you're like, I'm a 3-point checklist and boom, I'm done. Like, that's good for you if that's satisfying. For me, everything is about the exploration of the present moment and the connection with that individual who I am being energetically present with, and selecting individuals who want to be energetically present with me in compatible ways of fun. You know, and for me, that does look like talking and connection. And I don't want to like dig into a traumatic moment, but when that happened, were you able to say anything to that partner in real time, or did you just freeze, or like what was the actual connection there like for you?
I am a freeze. That is my, unfortunately, I'm like, wow, I should be a fucking fighter, but
I'm
no,
a fighter. My, I don't know. It's just different it's sets great. Of problems. I mean, it's a different true, sets of true. Problems.
I would love to fight though. Like, I'm a great fighter, but that's not where I go in those moments. Yeah. And it actually happened a couple of times in this sexual experience. And then I started to cry, and then they noticed, and then I communicated that that was not okay. And of course, you know, they were very apologetic, but it did set into motion a very, it was just a difficult ongoing conversation, I think, because that really ruptured my feeling of trust and safety with them. Yeah. And they weren't really able to be patient with me for that to be regained. Like, they felt like, okay, I apologize, like no big deal, but I really needed like time and trust rebuilt. And it, you know, it makes me think of with Aurora stories, like I ask that they're all about positive experiences, or that if they're not, you know, you can rewrite it to be a positive experience or one where you triumph. And it's not because I don't know that there are so many bad sex stories and worse than bad sex stories, right? I have been in a lot of traumatic sexual events, but I want to share and champion the positive stories and educate using the positive stories.
Yes.
Because I think creating these sexual scripts for people by sharing our real experiences, what we enjoyed, especially as women, is like incredibly instructive for people who want to hook up with women. But yeah, I've had my share of bad sex and sexual assault. And yeah, I think we all have.
Absolutely. And to your point, I think the framing around sharing those difficult experiences and why are we sharing them is incredibly important. You know, I went to film school, and the amount of material that had to do with like traumatic rape oriented things that was like not even a personal story, but because they were looking for like dramatic highs, so problematic. And so that's why for sex stories, for anyone who has applied or been on, you know that I ask a question of like, okay, if you've experienced sexual trauma, has it been processed with a professional therapist, like in a private space? You know, and if you're going to share about it, can you share what helped you heal or find kind of some balance? You know, so in that instance in particular, was it just a learning lesson for you? Were you able to find support in some way, shape, or form from a trusted person to kind of like process it?
Yes, I continued to see him, although I would not be intimate with him. And he actually, we were at a weekend away with friends of mine, a lesbian couple, and he got frustrated with me because I wouldn't have sex with him and left the next morning and I didn't go with him. And I told them like what was going on between us, and their reaction was so immediately supportive and like rushed. I just felt this like strength and support around me of these women being like, of course that's not okay. And that's terrible. And are you all right? And what can we do to help you? And no, I don't think you should see him anymore. But it was remarkable how difficult it was to get somebody to kind of take me seriously in what I was going through, experiencing, because I am known to a lot of my friends as someone who is very open sexually and down for whatever.
Well, there's a big difference between being actually sex positive and, you know, wanting to get unconsensually abused. Like that, those are two completely different things, you know, and I'm so glad to hear that you found people who were able to validate your experience. You know, I think that's a lot of what people get out of sharing stories together, is that kind of like human validation, like you said at the beginning. Like, we do have similarities in shame, even if the specifics are different. Or if they are the same, we can process our different kind of like responses to it and see that like, oh yeah, actually that's okay. And that's why it's so tricky when we are silent, when we do not share. I think that's where stuff gets, or rather, in my experience in listening to people's stories, that seems to be where it gets the most tricky and sticky. Mm-hmm. Shifting gears a little bit, though, I would love to hear, when it comes to sex, what do you think you are the best at, and how did you get to be so good?
I think I am a very enthusiastic lover, and I think riding dick on top, it's how I come. It's how I can make myself come easiest.
Ooh.
And I have my tits to work with. It's a very empowering position for me. And I was surprised to hear, again, this is like the shame thing, that a lot of women feel vulnerable in that position or too much on display. Mm. I have never felt that way, because that position to me equals the most pleasure and orgasm. And so it's just been always my go-to.
Facing or reverse cowgirl, does that make a difference for you?
Facing, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's more to work with, I think, with their like pubic bone and
for me too. Yeah.
Abdomen. Yeah, that friction is very important.
Because I can wrap my legs. I have long legs, so I can wrap it around and like really thrust a lot.
Oh, yeah. I think that I'm pretty good at that. And I have asked people in the past, like, am I a good lover? Am I good in bed? And the answer that I've gotten more than once is like, yes. And why? Because you are vocal and excited, enthusiastic, like you seem like you're having a good time. And I think that's ultimately like everyone just wants the other person that they're fucking to seem like they're enjoying it. And yeah. I do enjoy sex a lot. So yeah.
Dang. Also, I love like, you ride and you write to dick, like riding dick and writing dick.
I love that.
I fucking love that. Okay, so what else is on your personal and or erotic creative bucket list?
Well, I think that big time opening up my relationship and figuring out the path to having a more varied erotic life and future, long life ahead of us, right? That's definitely bucket list. I would like to watch my partner with another woman. And I know that that's something that will be, you know, a little chaotic for me, but it's something that I feel I would really deeply enjoy. I am a bit of a voyeur. I think when I was younger, I was more on the exhibitionist side. And I think as I've gotten older, I enjoy observing a lot. Career or like work-wise, I would love to script write and potentially direct visual pornography.
Oh, that can happen. I mean, if you wanted to,
I know.
We'll just add it on to our retreat. Like, that's basically what I want to do.
And then we're going to film a porno. I think that's something that would be really fun and, bring the whole experience full circle, the writing of these stories to be able to create that into watchable art is very exciting to me. And I've always had, I know you have a question that is about like, if you were a sex worker, like what would you do?
I
definitely had a lot of fantasies about porn star being in movies. I mean, I've made plenty of my own sex tapes, but I think that, I guess I am still an exhibitionist in that sense.
I love it. That's amazing. Yeah, I think for me, one of the most gratifying things is, especially when I'm working with a couple and it's like their first time making a movie together, and I get to be there like holding the camera, because I'm really good at holding space for people in both sexy ways and photographic ways. And so marrying those skills together also with writing, I'm like, yeah, like getting to create that porn star experience for people is, again, we probably can't call the retreat that, because we would never be able to advertise it. Creative retreats.
Right.
Creative retreats.
Yeah, that's something I'm struggling with right now. Like, I am making a writing group for Aurora, and I was like polling on Instagram today, like what it should be called. And of course, like, I want to call it like Slutty Writing Society and stuff.
Right.
And I can't, though, because I can't even use that word. Mm-hmm. And it's so frustrating to have to censor ourselves. And how do we accurately get across like the work that we're doing?
Dude.
And I want to be like, beyond the paywall, it's so good.
I know.
I send out these emails with all these like asterisks, like bleeping stuff out. And I'm like,
it's
would
ridiculous.
You like to just read it
it's
normally,
really,
please?
I know. It's so ridiculous. I like, my mind keeps getting blown that like on social media, SIGs is allowed to be a thing, but we can't say the word
I
sex.
Won't
I'm like,
do
it's
it.
The same. Me neither. I use the phrase original creativity, but of course, only the people who deeply listen use that. But I'm like, original creativity, you can't get mad. Play, you can't get mad. You know, like,
yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm couching stuff. But again, for people who don't know, they don't know. And so I'm with you on noodling on that problem.
Well, and I also read something. It's like, it's not like TikTok or Instagram doesn't understand that we're
I know. It's
labeling it. Like, they know what that is too.
Porn,
they know.
Porn. Like, yeah, it's like the algorithm.
Right.
No, but
they understand.
Yeah. That's the part of the human experience that I'm just like, you guys are batshit crazy. What the fuck? Like, why is that the norm? You know, not whatever.
Yeah.
But a writing group. Okay, how can people go get involved if they were like, yeah, I want to do an erotic writing group?
So I'm doing like random pop-ups for the next couple of months, because I want to land on a time and a day that works for the most people. And I'm going to put them on the site, on the Instagram, and I will be emailing. The best way to keep in touch is to get on the email list, because we are so often shadow banned on Instagram.
And it's a virtual writing group, just to clarify.
Yes.
For now.
It is.
Until
for
we
now.
Do our future hybrid retreat ones.
Exactly. I mean, and I love the virtual stuff, because the last writing workshop we did, we had people in South America, Australia, the UK, like all over the United States. And that's a fucking beautiful thing to bring people together like that. But yeah, absolutely. We're going to be in person one day soon.
Okay. You already answered my sex worker question, but I'd love to know, what do you think we, the public humanity, need to make the world a sexier, more loving place where taking care of each other is the norm?
I think, and this is something I've struggled with as I've discussed, but I think like treating each sexual encounter with care and intimacy, allowing ourselves to connect with each person, regardless of our intentions with them, regardless of, you know, how much we have in common. I said at some point that like my contribution to society is fucking men and changing their mind about politics. Like, I can't think of a better way to make a man vote in a way that you want than to fuck them and convince them of the way you see the world. There's no, you know, greater intimacy and allowing them to be safe and sharing your views and the respect that arises from that and the action that arises from that. I am, that's my contribution. That's how I'm changing the world, is by fucking people that start out with different values and viewpoints and changing them for the better.
You're inspiring too many fantasies in me, because I'm like, yes, how do I reach the incels? And if they come on and we have a long conversation, then maybe I could fuck them and change their mind. I'm like, how do I make it worth my time? I don't know.
Oh, well, this might not be – well, no, it will still be on the site. So a woman who – her name is Fan Pei Kuang. She went to Ukraine when the war started and literally volunteered her body as a sex worker to frontline soldiers and volunteers. And she wrote a story for Aurora a couple weeks ago about these experiences. And it's like, there was a lot of articles about her online, like kind of just being derogatory about what she's doing. And I'm like, how is the volunteering of one's body in war, whether it's for sex work or literally putting your body. Yes. Like, why is one more valuable than another? And I just, I mean, it's unsurprising, these views, of course, as we do this work, we realize how skewed things are. But, you know, I really want to challenge people to think differently. And I wish that our work was less cordoned off to the sex positive realm, because this shit should be mainstream. Like, we really need to hit the people that don't know or don't think this way, which is why we have to fuck them.
Yes, that is the answer. I know. I mean, truly, I'm looking to create places and experiences where I can do as much as possible, but also still earn a living, right? Like, I think a lot of my listeners seem to think that I just have some charmed life and I like sit around all day and I'm just like lounging and being this artist and fucking people. And so they think that they can like have access to my time and energy for free. And I'm like, well, pay me as a photographer and then I could probably fuck a lot of people, you know? Like if you want me to have the play party, you guys go rate and review on Spotify, because we're shadow banned right now, and go like join Patreon so I can afford a play space to invite you to, you know? Because then I will fuck as many people as possible and, you know, and get them tested. And I think also, too, like, sex workers have always been a huge part of war. Like, as a soldier, we need comfort. You can't get that. Especially, it's insane to think about people going months at a time without sex in the most stressful environments you can imagine.
Right.
You know, and if anyone has read Burnout by Emily and Amelia Nagoski, you know that, like, after our adrenaline spikes, in order for us to re-regulate, like, we need hugs, we need community, we need a fire to gather around, we need all of these things that the modern world has stripped us of, you know? And so then replacing that with shame around things that are, like, normal, happy body things, So people can find that on readaurora.com.
Yes, readaurora.com, and it's called Sex in a War Zone. And I actually brought down the paywall on that story because I just wanted everyone to read it. But as you're saying, Aurora is a reader-supported site, so I depend on people signing up to read the stories so that I can pay writers and I can exist as well in the world. Yeah. There's absolutely kind of a distrust, or like just an unwillingness, I think, to pay for sexual content because there is so much free porn. But I think there's also a lot of people that are very concerned with consuming ethical porn. And so the stuff that we create is definitely one way to do that.
Yeah, beautiful. Okay, so if you had an unlimited budget to create your perfect creation space, playroom, dungeon, mansion, palace, castle, hotel, whatever you, whatever structure you prefer, what is your space like?
It's a lot of light and then lots of windows. And then as it gets like to afternoon, evening, we have a lot of low lighting, a lot of like warm lamps. I'm imagining a sunken living room, but the sunken aspect is just like a huge bed mattress situation.
Yes. But maybe also with watching places around the edge.
Oh, yeah. Little seats and like perch
the balcony. Yeah.
Oh, definitely balconies. Floor to ceiling windows, French doors, throw out to the balcony so you can like go out and flash people and look below, get flashed. Maybe we're in New Orleans. I don't know. Where are we? We're somewhere very sexy. maybe Europe, maybe Milan. Somebody recently told me that Milan is the sexiest city, and I'm like, okay,
let's go there soon.
Okay. Yeah, that's where the retreat is.
I was just going to say, should we have a retreat there? I mean, yes,
I everywhere we should. Yes. Lighting is so important to me. The vibe the lighting creates is so important. So that's a big one. And comfort. So the bed, mattress, but also like pillows that are giving you some support so you can like lounge, but also prop up your back.
Yeah. Oof. I love it so much. Okay, Carly, I think we're going to have you back to talk creativity and more sexy work-related things. But
I would love that. Yeah, I would love to come back and we can check in and we can, you know, start really planting the seeds for our upcoming retreat.
Oh, I think we've planted them. We just got to keep watering and nourishing them.
Yes. Yes.
And lovers, you can help nourish those seeds by visiting readaurore.com. Carly, thank you so much for being a guest on X Stories.
Thank you for having me. It was beautiful to talk to you.